Taita and Nefer rode out and inspected the stone walls that Shabarko had hastily thrown up along the eastern approaches to the oasis of Ismailia. "Shabarko's efforts will not rank among the great architectural achievements of the age," Taita gave his opinion. "But that is all to the good. From the direction in which Naja will come, they appear to be natural features and will excite no suspicion until he enters the funnel and finds his front progressively narrowed. Your plan has the towering virtue of allowing us to choose our own battleground," Nefer nodded. "With the help of Horus, we will turn it into a slaughter ground." Then he laid his hand upon Taita's skinny arm. "Once again I find myself deeply in your debt, old father. This is all your work."
"No," Taita shook his head. "It was a gentle nudge I gave you. The rest of it is yours. You have inherited the military instincts of your father, Pharaoh Temosa. You will achieve the greatness that might have been his, had he not died so cruelly at the hands of the enemy who faces us now." "It's time for me to avenge that death," Nefer said. "Let us ensure that we do not let the cobra slither away this time."
Over the days that followed, Nefer exercised his forces and rehearsed in detail the plans and tactics of his defense. The battalions of archers and slingers marched out each morning and took up their positions behind the rough, ungainly walls. They placed small cairns of stones in front of the walls to mark the range, so that they'd be able to judge precisely the moment to spring a trap. They concealed bundles of spare arrows close at hand, so that they'd not run short of missiles during the battle. The slingers moulded their clay balls and baked them in the fire until they were rock hard. Then they laid up mounds of these deadly missiles behind the walls, close at hand. During the exercises, Nefer and his commanders played the role of Naja's troops and rode in from the desert, viewing their dispositions with a critical eye, making certain that they were completely concealed by the breastworks. Then, while they waited, Nefer rehearsed his tactics before the walls, charging, wheeling, and retreating, covering the ground so that his men came to know every fold, plain, and gully, even the location of the aardvark holes and other small obstacles across the field. He chose carefully the secure points behind the walls, where he could water the horses during the battle, and where his reserves could be held until they were needed. "I doubt there was ever a commander able to learn the board on which the game will be played as intimately as I," Nefer told Taita, and ordered his squadrons out again to go through the same evolutions. In the evening he rode back into the fort at the head of his squadron. The dust had mingled with his sweat and caked his face and body. He was weary to the bone, but content in the knowledge that he'd done all in his power to ready his legions for what lay ahead. When he pulled up Krus and Dav, threw the reins to the grooms, and jumped down onto the hard-baked parade ground, his sense of well-being evaporated. Zuga, the head eunuch of the royal Zenana, was waiting for him, wringing his fat hands, his eyes red with weeping, and his reedy voice whining with fear.
"Great Pharaoh, forgive me. I did my best, but she's as wily as a vixen. She has outwitted me."
"Who is this vixen?" Nefer demanded, though he knew who it must be.
"The Princess Mintaka."
"What has happened to her?" Nefer's voice was harsh with alarm.
"She has run away and taken the Princess Merikara with her,"
blubbered Zuga, in sure expectation of the strangling Garrote.